So I went backstage before the show, and I saw Henny. Milton was just getting ready to go on stage. And Henny literally says, show me a trick. While he's standing back there, because Henny goes on like in 15 minutes. He's why he goes on Milton's, you know, switch. So I'm watching Milton over Henny's shoulder. He says, show me a trick. So I show him a little coin trick or something. And I kid you not, he says, what are you doing after the show? Because I told him I had a magic shop in town.
Yeah.
I says, we're not doing anything. He says, well, how if we take my limo and we'll go out and get a bite to eat and we'll go see your shop?
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Harry Allen is internationally known as a magic dealer. He regularly appears in the dealer room of magic conventions around the world, bringing wares from his magic shop, Daytona Magic. He and his business partner, Irv Cook, have been in business together for 49 years. Harry is a master of one-liners, and he interjects some of them during our chat. He was a friend of another comedian who was well-known for his one-liners, Henny Youngman, and he talks about how he met him and developed his relationship. Harry also talks about the business of owning a brick-and-mortar magic shop and its future. He also gives us his philosophy on dealer ethics. All this and more are in this week's podcast here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're here in Houston, Texas, along with Harry Allen from Daytona Magic. Yeah, what's he doing in Houston? Well, tell us why you're here then, Harry.
I'm asking myself the same question.
Yeah, you're waking up here this morning, what am I doing in Houston? How did I get here?
It is wet outside, but we're from Florida, so we're used to that. First of all, I want to thank you for hosting me at this lecture tour. This is one of my stops on my lecture tour.
Mm-hmm.
People should know what you do for magic for many, many years, not just recently, Scott. So I want to personally thank you from all angles because I don't think you get the credit for what you do, but you do a lot behind the scenes, and I want to thank you because it's noted, and I notice it for all the years I've been in magic as well.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Certainly, you've been around for a long time, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to have a chance to talk with you about this because you have been a dealer, not just a brick-and-mortar shop, and have withstood all of the ups and downs and the current downs, it seems like, we'll get to here in just a minute, but also attending so many conventions, and a lot of people have seen you and know you, and I was thinking just last night about soap opera stars and people on television who are so well known, and because they are seen all the time on television, as a result, that everybody feels like, well, this guy should know me because I know him. And I'm sure that they have been introduced to you, and you've met them somewhere along the road around the world, and you have met tens of thousands of people, and try to remember everyone's name. But you have that great kind of personality, it seems, that you seem to recognize everybody, even though you can't recall their name, and so they still feel like they're a friend.
There's a lot of truth to that. I'm actually embarrassed a lot of times because I don't know their name, and you try to think of a way where you can get them to say their name so you can recognize them.
Right.
And you're right, it is funny because I'm the same way from the other end. Just because you see somebody on the internet a lot with their picture from TVs, you feel like you know them and they know you,
sure.
But they don't. Jeff McBride said it right. He says, when you contact me in person or whatever, tell me who you are, where you're from, and so I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it easier and not as awkward on that. But, you know, it's a simple philosophy. Just treat people with respect. Treat them how you want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I don't like attitudes. I hate attitudes
because,
you know what, everybody's better than somebody in some way or another.
But this is such an egotistical profession we're in.
There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. And it's I always have a saying that hard work gets noticed.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell anybody, I do this, do that. It's not what you say in life, it's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets noticed. It does. Hard work always gets noticed and
right.
So on. So when I'm around the world meeting people, some people you do remember, some people you recognize a face and not their name. But there's a little trick sometimes where you introduce them to somebody else that you're with and say,
right.
Hey, say hello to such and such. And then they'll automatically say, hey,
yeah.
I'm such and such.
Right.
And that's how I pick up their name.
That's a good idea. I've had a lot of people who I have seen in the elevator or something, and they may have seen one of my shows or have known me from somewhere along the way. And they would say, oh, I remember you. You're Scott. Or, you know, Magic Water from Zanzibar. I remember you. So they remember me. And so I should remember you. Remember I came up on stage and helped you with such and such. And then my little tip, what I use is say, oh, yeah, is it Steve, right? And they'll say, no, it was Marshall. And I said, well, at least I got some of the consonants correct in there,
there you go.
You know. So,
sure.
And you make a joke of it. But the point is that if you make an attempt to try to remember the person's name, it could be that you might be lucky to hit on it or be kind of close. No, it's not Steve, it's Steven, you know, or something. It's like, oh, yeah. And then you feel even much more special, but at least you're kind of trying.
Absolutely. I think they also can see your feelings if you're warm to them versus I'm not really interested in knowing you.
There you go.
You know, because I think both of us, everybody's on the other side of the fence sometimes, mm-hmm. where you meet somebody and they don't remember your name per se,
right?
And you know how they feel.
Well, and another thing too, certainly you are in a unique position as being a magic dealer, in that you have to internalize so many of your feelings. Because I talked to Joe Stevens about this one time, and he said I could never say a bad word about anybody in a public way, even to friends. I would not confide in you, Scott, or anybody else, because as close as we might be, I feel that somehow something might get back or might be slipped in a conversation, and that could be the loss of a potential customer right there. And then, of course, one bad thing rolls into another.
There's no doubt. I mean, it's like politics, I guess. You just got to really walk the line, and you really can't tell what your political views are or other views, this and that, because there's always someone on the other side, and just because you might like something they don't want to buy something from you, or they don't like you, or they're not going to be a fan of yours for that reason. It's funny that way, but it's true.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you have been a dealer now, I think you said last night, 49 years, is
49,
that right?
49, yeah.
Wow, okay. Time. You and Irv have been partners that long.
That long.
How'd you get involved?
'60s.
How'd you meet Irv to begin with?
Well, very few people don't know this, but I used to be a taste tester for the Swan Sweet Prune Company.
Okay.
I work one day and you're off three. That's not bad. And then before that, I was a lifeguard in a car wash, but that didn't work well either. actually, this is funny because really this is the only job I've ever had was the magic business.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I was 9 years old, I walked into Irv's store in New Jersey. My father was in the furniture business.
Mm-hmm.
Brought me to work one day, and I'm not going to hang around a furniture store, so I'm walking around and I see this magic store. And Irv was only in business maybe a few months before that. And he says, kid, what are you hanging around here so long? I said, well, my dad has a furniture store down there. He said, oh, well, if you're hanging around, you want to do some things, mark some things? I said, sure. I wasn't even into magic. I didn't know magic.
It was a magic shop that Irv had.
That's correct.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Small one.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about magic. And then he says, if you want, he says, you can come every Sunday and work, because it was a weekend type of a place.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, sure. And that's how I got started in the magic business. I didn't know anything about magic at that time. And I just grew up from the inside out. I never went to a magic store and was buying magic. I grew up working in a magic shop my whole life. Went to school. I have a real estate license, which I still keep up. I don't do it because there's no fun in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might be rewarding, but if you live your whole life and at the end of your life you don't say, I made more money than anybody else, you basically say that I enjoy life as much as anybody. And in magic, that enables you to really enjoy life, make life. And I can't really see myself doing anything.
You don't want to necessarily be the richest man in the cemetery.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I don't know if I could sit behind a desk and just do insurance and so on.
It's for some people, but not for others.
I think, yeah. And that's probably what drives me to work as much as and hard as I do for all these years. I haven't cut back. I'm just traveling as much and working as hard as ever doing this. But I just keep thinking this is what I want to do for my living is the magic, and that's what why it drives.
And not just as a dealer, but also as a performer.
Performer, dealer, exactly, all the angles.
Which do you find that you like better?
I would love this part of my life to be more of a performer, but I can't be running around doing magic shows and negate the business,
right?
Or neglect the business because it won't do well without me being there.
Do you feel that the performance side of your career would not pay the bills as well as what the dealer side would?
Not so much that, but to take 49 years that we built and then let it just start slacking off because you're not there.
Right.
You have to.
And there's no heir to the throne, I guess, basically.
Right now there's not. I'd love to have one.
Yeah.
You know?
Funny that a few people know this also, but Irv Cook's son was born on the same day and within minutes of my older son also.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, they were like both on October the 2nd and 1978.
Wow.
And so, and I think my son was born at 8:15. His was like 8 o'clock or something.
Sure.
Just in different parts of the world.
I was there when Jack was born, and it's funny because I was with Irv there. We were watching, I think, Dallas and Washington on Monday Night Football. It was a Monday night for sure.
Yeah, it was Monday.
Because I remember it was Monday Night Football there, and that's interesting.
Yeah,
Irv's son is an attorney, And his
he's not going to be taking over the business.
Probably not. And his daughter's a cantor at a temple. Mm-hmm. My daughter has her master's in HR, but she's doing a thing for a thing called Blackboard, where they write curriculum for all the colleges around the country if you take courses online. Mm-hmm. So she does her thing, and they're all in different directions there. But
And let me just say right now, I'm sorry to hear you mention last evening that your wife had was just diagnosed with uterine cancer.
Well, not just. She's finishing her last treatment actually today. Yeah, okay. And I'm going to get home as soon as I can to be with her on this. But it's her sixth treatment mm-hmm. that she's had. Everything looks like it's going in the right direction. So hopefully mm-hmm. we're just going to move forward from there and be optimistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got a great set of doctors, so we did our due diligence there mm-hmm. and doing everything we can. And hope for the best.
How'd she find out about that? I mean,
just different symptoms.
Okay.
And then one treatment led to another until they finally came to the situation.
They said it could be this, and we need to eliminate this and that and whatever. But so she had gone in. It wasn't like...
No.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they caught it early.
Good.
Which is really, really good. And a couple of our friends in town are oncologists, and we actually sent her to one that was our friend's the oncologist. He sent his mother and wife to this guy. So hopefully the best.
And her name is, again?
My wife is Sandra.
Sandra. We'll keep Sandra in our prayers.
Yep, thanks.
And so going back then to magic and to being a performer, when you're performing, do you prefer close-up or do you like stage, stand-up? I mean, you've got everything, of course, that you sell, and so you have an
Agreed.
Advantage of kind of seeing what you're demoing.
That's a very good point. You're right. People say, what do? I say, you have to really do it all if you want to be able to sell it all or talk about it all. I found my niche in stand-up comedy, so mm-hmm. comedy magic. I mean, I enjoy it all, but if I have to lean towards a preference, the stand-up, more of a nightclub-type situation
right.
or stage,
mm-hmm.
I like to do. And I have the most fun with that, joking with the audience
right.
and so on, having a good time with them. And
well, your comedy style, of course, you had the book, The Sleight of Mouth, which was published when?
Oh, my, this is a long time, 20, back in the 80s.
Yeah, 40 years ago or something.
Yeah, okay. Oh, my God.
Was that as a result of your association with or meeting Henny Youngman? And tell me kind of a little bit about that.
Yeah, I will. That was actually before Henny. I'm a student of life as well as magic.
Okay.
Outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm literally, and I also know what I like when I'm in the audience, what I like to watch. And to me, once people are narrators as a magician, it gets boring. I'm taking this card, I'm putting it in my pocket. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see that. And I like a guy who's funny.
Yeah.
And I noticed there's really nothing funny. Back in the 80s, there was no comedy books on the market. Where can I go for a resource book to get some great lines? Orban was out, was the only. And unfortunately, a lot of stuff was outdated.
Mm-hmm.
So you go in a book, you might have to read 50 lines, and maybe only one or two you could use. So I put together some one-liners. Some of them were borrowed from people that gave me permission. Some of them I took some good comedy lines and turned them into magic lines. And then I categorized them for openings, closings, heckler stoppers, and so on. And I put it out as a little pamphlet. I actually did a little NBC interview with it, showing my first my book pamphlet on there. And then sent it up to D. Robbins.
Yeah.
And I still have the letter on my desk. This is back in the 80s. He says, I'd like to carry these, but I don't think it'll sell. So, literally.
Yeah,
so, needless to say.
And how many copies were sold?
He sold thousands, literally thousands. It's reprinted.
Yeah, because it's not just for magicians.
No, it is for any kind of speakers. It's been reprinted for many times now. It went from hardback to softback because I like to keep it in that $20 price range.
That's a good price.
Versus raising the price. The initial ones were hardback. In this situation... we start off with five pamphlets with different titles, and then I immediately put them into one large book and added 500 more lines to it to make it just one big book, because the smaller books were put out just to test the market. Well, Robbins has reordered a lot since then and so forth, and it's been sold all over the world. And basically, it's just I have another one in the works. I just don't have time to finish it yet, but it's a resource book for any kind of speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Now... So that was put out before I met Henny. And then all of a sudden, Henny was coming down to town with Milton Berle to just do a one-nighter.
Wow.
So
Daytona?
In Daytona.
Okay.
So I said to my wife, I said, let's go over and introduce ourselves. My wife says, are you kidding?
No. I can imagine what my wife would say.
Yeah,
sure,
she did
right.
say that. We had tickets to the show, too. So I went backstage before the show,
mm-hmm.
and I saw Henny. Milton was just getting ready to go on stage. And Henny literally says, show me a trick. Well, he's standing back there because Henny goes on like in 15 minutes. He's why he goes on Milton's, switch.
Yeah.
So I'm watching Milton over Henny's shoulder. He says, show me a trick. So I show him a little coin trick or something. And I kid you not, he says, what are you doing after the show? Because I told him I had a magic shop in town.
Yeah.
I says, we're not doing anything. He says, well, how do we take my limo? We'll go out and get a bite to eat and we'll go see your shop. And I says,
I pinch myself.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And I actually brought him a couple pamphlets of my book, not that they needed it, but I brought them anyhow just as my get into the door. And that's exactly what happened. I called my business partner, Irv, who didn't go to the show. And when I told him the story, he says, you're full of...
Yeah.
He says, no way. So I said, Irv, get dressed, come on over to the shop. So he came over to the shop and with Henny there till late night. And then for some reason, we just clicked because we became very, very good friends after that. I used to go to his condo up in New York about once every other month. We would talk often. What impressed the heck out of me with Henny is, he was a made man. He was always the star and everything. And he says to me, he says, every time I talk to my phone, what do you have new to tell me? What do I have new to tell you?
Yeah.
He always, his ears were always open.
Yeah.
He treated people with respect, even though he had nothing, I feel I had nothing to gain by knowing me, but he enjoyed the magic and he enjoyed this here. And then he invited Irv and I out to do Milton Berle's 80th birthday party at the Friars Club.
Wow.
Now, in one room, he's about pinching yourself.
Yeah.
He has us doing close-up magic in one room. This was in the green room of the Friars before they went and did the roast for Milton's 80th party. In one room, there's like 50 major stars. And I didn't know how Henny fit in with these big stars. Where was your category? You know, where was your level?
Yeah.
We walked in the room with Henny. Exactly right. We walked in the room with Henny, and across the room was Lucille Ball. She stops what she's doing, and she yells, Henny, and runs over and gives him a hug.
Yeah.
I said to myself, now I know where Henny fits in. He's right up there.
Exactly, yeah.
And in the room was Milton Berle, of course, Lucille Ball, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Red Buttons, Red Skelton, Danny Thomas, Danny Kaye, Red Buttons. I mean, there's star after star was in that room.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was no egos because they were all in there together.
Yeah.
It was really neat. And it's interesting because...
Nothing but respect for each other.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they all love magic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you hit them with a couple one-liners that aren't their normal one-liners. They was having a field day with the magic. And, man, yeah. I'm like, is this really happening?
Mm-hmm.
Shields and Yarnell, I'm regressing a little bit, but Shields and Yarnell taught me a long time ago when on the cruise ship, even entertainers like to be entertained.
True.
And that's an interesting theory because in your younger days, you walk out, what do you, amongst magicians even, you say, what am I going to show these guys that they don't know? What happens if they know what I'm going to, I mean, it's a head trip. Well, you and I know, even if you see something you know, if it's done well and done funny or whatever, you enjoy watching
Absolutely.
It. I do. Sure. Most people do. Sure. Comedians like to watch other comedians. If they're
musicians as well. I remember talking to Robert Allen about that when he was living in Las Vegas, and that after everyone was finished with their shows or whatever, they would go to this place, and there would be Frank Sinatra or some of the Rat Pack and whatever, and he would play guitar or whatever. He would kind of entertain these guys also, so the entertainers like to be entertained as well, just like comedians like to go to another show, not to put somebody down or to steal ideas, but they just want to go and be entertained.
Absolutely.
You know?
Isn't that amazing?
The Magic Castle, the same kind of a way. I think you got a lot of people who are in the entertainment business, celebrities out there, who want to go and be entertained and not be bugged with paparazzi or people asking for autographs, which is why they don't want you doing any of that, you're taking pictures or what you think at the Academy of Magical Arts. So the point is that they feel comfortable and they enjoy being entertained. So I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because... I think the entertainers actually appreciate other entertainers, too, what they're working on. And why is it, Scott, that we put ourselves up in the mindset of the performer?
Mm-hmm.
If you see a performer who's nervous and struggling, I'm sitting in the audience nervous.
Yeah.
And I'm not even on the stage, but you know what I mean? Isn't that funny? But
yeah.
You see somebody who's confident on stage, it brings you up as the audience feeling, wow, I feel, you know what I mean? This is going to be cool.
Right.
And I always say that I have that feeling that your attitude determines your altitude.
I didn't make that saying up,
but I like that saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. So if you walk out there and have a good time, you can't make the audience have a good time. All you can do is have it and lay it out there, and you hope they join you. Am I right?
Yeah. That makes sense. And so let me back up just a second. When you were saying that you kind of went backstage, or you were telling Sandra that you hope to go backstage, how did you do that? I mean, you just boldly go backstage and give somebody your business card, say, hey, I'm a magician, and...
I actually went back there, and I says, I've got some stuff here for Henny and for Milton.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so they just let you in.
He said, stay here in a minute. It's back in the East.
Yeah.
He just checked. Just says, yeah, he said, send him back.
Yeah.
So we went right back there. And I knew the theater because I worked at theater before, so I knew where to go. I had no clue if they were going to be receptive or not.
Sure.
But, hey, what do you have to lose, right?
That's right. Well, that's what I've always said, too. It's like asking out the prom queen when you're in school that what's she going to say but no? You may as well ask.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. That's a theory you live with a lot of things you have to do in life nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You ask if they say no, and hey, what the heck?
Yeah.
But it was a very, very good relationship. He, unfortunately, when he passed away, I was actually working in Louisville, the Magic Club, the night he passed away. I saw it on the news that he passed away, Henny. And he, His mind was sharp to the end. His body just gave out.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part. So
he was in the 90s, or how old was he?
92.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? A lot of comedians, entertainers live.
You know, that's very true. I was talking with a friend out in Hollywood, and he was telling me about hanging out with Mel Brooks and Sid Caesar and all these other guys, and they have lived. Well, of course, Sid has passed, but he's lived to a ripe old age, and Mel Brooks is still around, a lot of guys. I think it's just they have a nice outlook on life. You know?
It's the endorphins in your brain. It's mm-hmm. it's the stress is what kills. And if you can have
a clear conscience and stress free,
absolutely,
it's hard to
happy state.
How do you go about trying to keep that? I mean, you have a lot of things in your life. I mean, as far as your busy schedule and with your wife's health and whatever else. I mean, there are different things every day that are fires being put at. How do you keep focus? What do you do?
It's very funny. My good friend in town is an endocrinologist, mm-hmm. which has to do with blood and sugar and diabetes. When I first met him, he says, how do you handle stress? On the form, I filled him out because I became friends. You have to go on. And one of the questions on the form that you fill out besides your health history is, do you have stress? And my answer on the paper was, who doesn't?
Yeah.
And when we went over the paper, he says, that's the proper answer. It should say, how do you handle stress?
Yeah.
And what I try to do is put things in perspective. If there's something I can't control, then I'm not going to stress over them. That doesn't mean I don't handle things and try to prevent things from happening before I get there.
Sure.
So I set up things so there is no stress is what I try to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife and I learned a long time ago, you look at a situation, and if in 1 week from now it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. then you don't stress over it. So in other words, if you're worrying about your reservations for a hotel or something, and in 1 week it doesn't matter, then you say, you know what, you handle it. But there's no reason to stress over it because you can't do it. But if it's something that's going to be a long-term effect, then you better stress and get taken care of.
You should be stressing. If you're going to stress, it should be on the big things, not the small things necessarily. And you have to determine what is it that's a big thing. When I travel a lot of times, I may not have a reservation at a hotel. And I kind of fly by the seat of my pants from a standpoint, particularly internationally. I might try and find a bed and breakfast because I don't know how far I'm going to be going. There might be something I want to spend some more time at this museum or with this friend or visiting whatever, and longer or less time. And I'm going to go down the road sooner or later. And I don't want to be hampered by having these obligations. And so I've kind of learned to live my life as an adventure and being kind of freewheeling so that way that you are responding to these events that happen in your life, you know.
That's neat. I also have a neat thought because spontaneity creates excitement.
Yeah.
Now,
and that's a hard thing, by the way, on magic, to keep that freshness and that spontaneity. Because when you're performing, and it sounds like that you have said that joke over and over, then the audience is going to pick up on that, too. You have to have that freshness.
Agreed. Yeah. And especially if it's situational comedy.
Yes.
So if somebody walks in late to your show, that may not happen all the time.
Right.
But, man, you just said it like all of a sudden it just happened there.
There was something that you had said last night in the presentation. I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting sidetracked a little bit here. But I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something that appeared to be impromptu. Let's restate that. It was something that it was an impromptu situation, but obviously that you had encountered that particular situation so many times. I think I know what it was, where you were throwing the ring and actually it's a penny or whatever. Oh, that was a penny. It's just that it looked like that you had said that so many times, it didn't look genuine enough that, I really did throw the ring. And it's like the surprise on your face wasn't genuine surprise.
Okay.
And that's a hard thing to try to act. And to do that, you know, that's mm-hmm. what professional actors are doing, you know, over and over, let's say on Broadway, you know, every night, that they've got to maintain that freshness. And I think magicians need to be thinking about that then, too, and not just going through the motions in rote.
I recommend taking a local acting, go into local acting.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did. I can't sing or dance. That's why I do magic. seriously.
Yeah.
And I did take local, went into, did some local plays, non-magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a big theater student. I mm-hmm. love Broadway. I love theater.
Yeah.
And I look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It's the facial expressions. It's the lines. It's the I almost think it's magic as my backup secondary.
Yeah.
Like, you know, laugh and have a good time. Okay, that's great. But how in the hell did you do that? So you see, I'm working the yin and the yang. I'm not just focusing on the trick and the finale, the trick. I like the journey to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But to saying that, I try to, in my mind, work hard on that, on mm-hmm. looking spontaneous and try to squeeze as much out of the audience as I can, the reaction.
But there's so many things that we're thinking of during the course of a show to make sure that I get the right volunteer, what am I going to be saying, and you're two tricks ahead, I think the audience and the lines you're going to be using and what, you know, how do you react, and also judging the room. when particularly you're doing a talking comedy act, that you don't want to do the same lines if the audience is not hip or whatever. And so you kind of got to judge that then necessarily, too.
Yeah.
And so to maintain that freshness so that when you're saying those stock lines, if you will, that you've used over and over, and to try to keep those fresh, not every magician is really good at doing that.
That's a good point. It's
you almost need to rehearse being fresh.
You have to have a conscious effort to
yes,
do it.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
it is funny you say that because every time you're doing a show, or even meeting a customer at a convention, mm-hmm. and after you just did the trick 20 times, you're doing 21 times behind the booth.
Yeah,
you literally they don't want to know that you've done that. They want to make it look like you're just hot and hat, and you're just bam, you're
right.
excited and have the energy.
Right.
That's why I try to take care of my health, seriously, because I have the energy.
Exactly, yeah.
I try to get the rest when I can, so when I'm working, I can give it my all. I can't be just tired, and
because
people don't – it's kinetic energy. Whatever you give out, you're going to get back.
Exactly. Yeah, how many conventions do you do a year?
Maybe 15.
Wow, that's quite a few.
Yeah.
Worldwide?
All over.
Yeah.
All over. Yeah.
What's been one of your favorite ones?
The one in Israel and Mars Convention, Magic at the Red Sea.
Yeah, that
Roy Zaltzman.
Yeah, Roy Zaltzman puts on. He doesn't do that anymore.
He only did two of them,
yeah.
I believe.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, the audience was electric. Max Maven was on the show. Flip was on the show. There was a guy from Germany. I can't remember his name. Forgive me on that.
Axel Hecklauer.
No. Pitt.
Oh, Pitt Hartling.
Yes, he was on the show.
Excellent.
Very good. And the thing is, the room was standing room only. It was a solid room. The energy was there. I don't know why or how. It just was electrified. I happened to MC the show, and I did a few minutes, about 15 minutes on the show. Mm-hmm. But the room was fantastic. But here's what's neat, because the further you travel from home, the more the star you are.
Well, good point.
I mean, that's usually the way it is.
Yeah, you're not a prophet in your own land.
Exactly. So after the show, you felt like you were on the red carpet. The flashbulbs were going off for 15 minutes.
Wow.
Literally, I mean, you walk away.
You're thinking
that. You're talking about stress and high. You can't buy the medicine, feeling that you get from that. So
sure.
That was really one of my most favorite shows, the feeling I got from that on there. And then I did a show in Barcelona where it was a tiered seating, and it was also a very tight standing room only. And that was a lot of fun because they were excited.
Mm-hmm.
But the language translation there is a little tough because some people don't speak any English, some people a little, and some speak none.
Right.
And you have a translator. So I lean more towards visual stuff and not so much the one-liners, because the one-liners, I mean, some people laugh right away who know English.
Yes.
The other ones, they have to wait for the translation. I'm standing there waiting for the translation.
Right.
Then they laugh.
Yes. And
then you go.
In some cases, because of the culture, I would imagine that those lines kind of fall flat.
I am very careful to do lines that are simple, so they understand.
Better internationally,
right. Exactly, because some of the words don't translate.
Right, right.
Yeah, believe me, I know. And it's a shame because you bite your tongue because there's such situations sometimes where you got the perfect line.
Yeah,
it's just not going to go there.
Right,
and it's like So you just have to just put yourself in a mentality and say, hey, just do what you can do.
Sure,
make it the best. Still have the energy and do the visual, but they're just not seeing the best of the lines because they won't get them.
Right, right. Now, when you lecture overseas, that's another thing. I think it'd be difficult. I haven't lectured in a foreign speaking country. I've lectured in England, which makes it easy, and Australia, but whenever that you're going to be going to France or Italy or whatever, or Spain, Asia, wherever, I would think that it would be kind of difficult to try to teach something and then stop and then let someone try to interpret.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Japan there. We did the same thing. They had a translator, and it's just, you just really have to just wait, pace it out, but more importantly, you have to tell yourself it's not you. That you're not feeling that everything just flowed as much as you wanted to flow,
right,
okay?
Right.
Then they get it too because they understand they're translating the language.
Sure.
They just don't. So again, I mean, try to do more visual stuff that they can immediately visualize and see. It doesn't matter what language that is, but on explanations or the jokes and stuff, where they'll just have to go from there.
Well, going to conventions, by the way, we were discussing at breakfast early this morning after your lecture last night, that we're going through a real change. And I don't know what this is like. There's always a pendulum swing in everything. I don't care whether it's fashion, whatever, and culture. And I don't know that the pendulum will swing back necessarily to everybody joining again, because again we were discussing about how that I believe that people are not the joiners that they were of our generation, like with the Lions Club or JCs or any of the fraternal organizations or whatever. They would just soon stay home or to watch YouTube or to interact online or through Facebook or whatever. And so there are fewer and fewer people who would attend. Also, it's a function of price and cost. And so this is a generation that will not necessarily exceed their parents financially for the first time in generations, and as a result may not have that discretionary income to spend. Now, are you kind of getting sidetracked for just a second, but do you see any decline in sales through your magic shop? And if so, that probably is because of internet sales competition, but then we'll get back to conventions in a minute. But what do you think?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you why.
Okay.
Because there's the economy.
Yeah.
Which has a lot to do
and
with it.
And that's a pendulum, certainly. Yeah.
There's health care.
Yep.
You know what I mean? There's so many different variables. There's the internet. We like to say that we're keeping up with everything with internet sales, mm-hmm. with marketing on the internet, with still hitting the road, with keeping our website going. So we like to think that we're keeping up with that wave on that. But if you think about it, it's not just magic. All businesses are economically down a little bit. Then it's coming mm-hmm. back up a little bit. It's fluctuating. It's better than it was.
Right.
It's still not like it was back when, you know, a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could forecast,
oh, yeah.
we would be in good shape. We'd be in Vegas or Wall
sure.
Street.
Yeah, Wall Street, yeah.
If we could forecast. But you know what? Like you said, it is a pendulum. Will we see it in our lifetime? We'll get back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what will cause it to get back to it?
Yeah.
I mean, who thought, you know, internet computers back when we were
younger would have this kind of impact. Yeah, that's right.
There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? Yeah, I do believe things seek their own level again. I don't know how it'll get there, what will make it mm-hmm. get there, and so on. But
the convention registration has really gone down a lot. I have heard it said that there are more conventions now than before. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but certainly we're seeing a lot of them this year that have been added. And I'm talking about the Genie Convention, Magic Live, and FISM. So those are three major international conventions that will take registrations away from the traditional regional and local conventions.
It's funny because the one we put on in Daytona, Daytona Beach Festival of Magic, we get a consistent 400 to 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out all year long.
And now those are mainly around the region or just Florida, or how far do you reach as far as your registration?
South America.
Wow, okay.
Europe.
Hmm.
All over the United States.
Okay.
Because these are places I travel when I'm doing the lecturing and the conventions.
Yeah.
And I'm advertising our convention. And here's where we hit our niche. Our registration fee is $145.
Mm-hmm. That's
a
good price.
Everybody a full dinner on Friday night dinner show, and a proper dinner.
Heck of a deal.
We bring in big names every year. You can't 1 year have big names and then fall down next year and say, okay, people will come.
Right.
You got to consistently keep that level high and the bar high. We keep it concise. It's Friday, Saturday. It's over on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't have to spend a whole week going to their vacation, in other words. It's at a nice resort on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to find our niche to make it our convention work.
Right.
Price, talent, give more than their money's worth. We have a big auction on Sunday morning. That's where we find our niche. We're not a $400 convention. We don't make it a 4 or 5 dayer. And I'm not saying that's bad because mm-hmm. we're not an international event.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about people, you know, it's hard to take off a whole week from work on
right.
their vacation. Or do you want to take your week vacation and just do it out of that, you know?
Well, when you stop and think, of course, the people that are mainly the registrants of conventions are those who are part-time or they're hobbyists or an amateur of some sort, and they just have a lot of fun and they like to attend something that this would be like attending a woodworking or quilting convention as far as most of them are concerned.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. And when people ask me, hey, should I go to the IBM? Should I go to the Genie? My answer is always the same. Do you like magic? And of course, they say, yeah. I said, well, how do you not go?
Yeah.
How do you not have a good time?
Go to as many as you can.
Absolutely. You're going to mm-hmm. have a great time. You're going to learn. And you pull out at the different conventions, different things. But you
everyone's
don't
different.
Exactly right. And you don't know before you go what you're going to pull out and what relationship you're going to meet and have a good time with. So, yeah, it's all good. And conventions, I think the attendance may be down, but I think that it'll be back where it needs to be when people realize, mm-hmm. you know, they're missing a lot of
Well, the synergies of every convention differ, even from year to year. Whenever that you have a certain group of talent that seems to mix pretty well, then the next year you're going to have a different group of talent, or even at a different convention that's going to be, in this case, down the road. You're going to be having the Genie Convention in Florida. You're going to be having the IBM Convention in Florida, and then
Daytona Beach Festival.
There are three of them, and each one of those have their own unique
Flavor.
Flavor, exactly right. And synergies because of the talent pool that's going to be there. Mm-hmm. And it's just the excitement of everything. And so each one is going to be different, and you will learn something from all of those, I would think.
No, they're absolutely mm-hmm. right. And mm-hmm. there's different talent. The talent we brought in for our convention, one mm-hmm. of the things in the contract is you were not working IBM or Genie.
Yeah.
Not to be mean or aggravated, but why would a conventioneer say, you know what, there's no sense going to Daytona, I just saw them there.
Genie had the same thing as well, because that's why we had a couple of acts booked, and they said we can't because that our contract, Genie says we can't.
It makes sense though, right?
Absolutely. TOM has the same thing.
It's not a bad thing. We actually have in our contracts too, even when there's not conventions going on in Florida at the same time, that you don't do any lectures in Florida a year before.
Mm-hmm. Because
mm-hmm. we don't want people to say, well, I'd like to come to your convention, but I just saw them.
Do you have it both before and after, or just before?
I think it's just before.
Because
it is just before.
Because some people might say, well, I will hold off and wait and see him next month.
But we have like 15 good talents.
That's true.
So if it's just one of the 15 you've seen before, it's not a bad thing.
Okay.
And so on. But usually just before, because we don't want to strap the entertainer.
See, the TOM, I believe our contract requires 6 months before and after.
After as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes sense. It's a courtesy to the performer as well mm-hmm. and to everybody.
Yeah.
And there's enough talent out there to know that. But the neat thing about the conventions is the relationships that you meet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just a ton of great relationships. And you know, I was telling you last night at the dinner or breakfast we had, the magic is not making things appear and disappear. It's the friendships mm-hmm. of strangers that you meet and become good friends with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's neat because you and I may not talk for 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
We just pick up where we left off. Am I right?
That's absolutely true. That my wife often talks about the fellow who is my best friend since kindergarten. We were roommates in college. I've even had him on the podcast. And he's with a law firm out in Oakland. And we don't see each other very often at all. And until I started going out and working the Magic Castle on a consecutive regular basis, then he would come down to see me. I hadn't seen him in years and years, and we exchanged Christmas cards, and my wife would say, how can you continue to be friends? Although when we pick up, it's just like you were saying, as if we just saw each other yesterday.
Yep.
You know, there's no change, and I know everybody has that. Well, not everybody. Some people may have some problems, I guess, with that. But I think maybe that's unique just about our personalities. Maybe a psychologist could probably get into this a little deeper with us.
But we're fortunate that we do the magic because we could pretty much travel the world.
That's true.
And
have friends wherever
you
go.
And have friends, know somebody to pick you up at the airport or can take you a little tour of the area.
Years ago when the Yellow Pages were around, we talked a little bit about that then also, and I was traveling to different places. I would look, when I'd be back in the hotel room, if I didn't have any business clients or going to dinner or whatever, I didn't want to sit and watch TV by myself or read a book necessarily, I would first of all look to see who was in the area, and I would call up somebody just out of the blue. They wouldn't know me from Adam. And this would have been back in the 80s, I guess. Just say, hey, I'm a magician, happen to be in town. If you got some time, let's meet at a bar or have a beer or a cup of coffee or something. Just want to, chat and trade some tricks or thing, Nine times out of ten, they say, yeah, come on down, or the next time you're in town, be sure and call me. I've got a show tonight or whatever else. And it is certainly a fraternity that you can feel comfortable that you've got brothers in arms and sisters in arms.
For the younger people listening, you ought to explain what Yellow Pages are.
yes. Yeah.
That's funny but scary.
I guess it's like Google on paper.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. It's fantastic. But that is... to me, is the great one of the nicest things in magic,
mm-hmm.
literally.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a quick story.
All over the world, international.
I was going to Singapore working Lawrence Kong's convention. I did it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got my airfare, they wondered if I wanted to lay over in Paris for 13 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my wife with me the second time, and I says, yeah. So what did I do? I contacted some Paris customers and friends,
mm-hmm.
and I said, what would it take for you guys to give us a little tour around?
Yeah.
So we landed in Paris, gave us a nice tour for 13 hours, restaurant, the Louvre, and so forth.
Wow.
Hopped back on a plane and continued on there. Now, that wouldn't have happened because I actually tried. I didn't want to bother anybody. I actually tried to get a tour bus or something. There is no tour bus for 10, 12 hours that you can get. So he just picked us up at the airport, gave us the personal tour,
right,
which was absolutely phenomenal. And then we hopped back on there. But it would never happen if I didn't know people over there or meet them and so on.
Yeah.
And, of course, I was very thankful. I hooked him up with some good magic because I certainly appreciated what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever people expect anything from anybody to just do anything. You know what I mean? But I appreciate what they do. It means a lot to me.
Well, I think that people should show some thanks also that I believe if you are showing any kind of hospitality or whatever that it is – for an example, the book The Art of Schmoozing by AJ is excellent. Being able to give out some tchotchke to everybody for whatever. I mean, whether it's to a hotel registration person or to an airline flight attendant or anybody else, that you're giving them something, and they actually it's an unexpected gift, basically, which is what AJ's book was about.
You know what? It doesn't matter really what it is. It's just the thought that you're giving somebody
there
something.
There you go. Yeah. And I think my bottom line is saying it's important that you kind of let people know that you appreciate the time that they give you, and to kind of get back with them, even just sending an email saying, hey, thanks, I enjoyed. And I'm probably very bad about that because I have so many people who have been on this podcast, and I'm so thankful for the time that, like you right now, have given me. I fail to follow up with an email just to say thank you. I say thanks, and then I'm gone, and then that's the end of it. But I apologize for that, so I'm not practicing what I preach right here. But I do thank all those people who have been on in the past with me.
No, I'm sure I'm just like you. Yeah. There's some you do miss some, but you don't mean to.
Mm-hmm.
If people ever send me a picture that they took of us together, and they took the time to send it to me, whether it be snail mail or regular, if I can, and almost all the time, I'll send them a thank you because they didn't have to do that,
right?
And I appreciate that they took the time to send a picture they took of us together or something like that. And,
As to being a dealer, I was going to ask you about the kinds of things that you sell, the things that you create. You have a shop that you build things. Is that right? Tell me about something about your manufacturing and Daytona Magic.
We have a full-time sewer, a seamstress upstairs that makes flowers and sewn items and change bags and so on. And then we have two woodworkers. We have a higher-end one that works with oak and formica.
Okay.
And then we have one that works with a lower-quality wood. Not a bad wood, but lower quality. So we have two different woodworkers, but they work in their own shops.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room in our shop downtown for them.
I wouldn't think so, yeah.
But they only work for us. They're actually one guy is 8 months behind because he makes like 300 items.
What kinds of guys things? Square circles and things?
The dove through the glass.
Okay.
Flip over dove boxes. Mm-hmm. Flip open tables, tip over boxes. He makes our sub trunks.
Okay.
So he makes the high end big stuff and the smaller stuff too. He might make the wooden oak handles for a change bag, and then the seamstress takes that one. And then we have a machinist who works for us full time in his shop with all the lathes and everything. We put out a full set of coins. We bought the Jim Z coin boxes, the keto boxes. We bought his lathes, and Jim taught our guy to make them.
Right.
So it was a real nice set. So we have our machinist to make the metal stuff, and then we have our woodworkers, and we have our seamstress.
Mm-hmm.
And then just constantly put out items. And then we wholesale them to other shops and other distributors as well.
How do you go about trying to select what items you're going to be selling? Do you go by what Murphy's and others might suggest? You know, here's the hottest new thing? Or
it's funny you say that because Irv and I have been in the business so long, we pretty much have a feel what would go and what wouldn't go.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many new things every day.
Exactly.
Literally.
We're not going to make an item that's already that you can buy. We usually make an item you can't buy anymore.
Yeah.
That was always a great trick.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, man, here's a great trick. Let's bring it back.
Yeah.
There's one that we just brought back out of oak. It's gorgeous. It's called a Kennard's Mystery Box with a little ring and a wand. And
you
put the ring in the bottom of the box, and then the wand goes on the top, and the ring magically goes up and locks itself on the wand.
On the wand.
On the wand sticking out. How could that be?
Right.
That's an old effect that is not around anymore. It was made out of a cheap plywood. Now we brought out a nice one in oak.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, for the young guys, they've never seen it before. It's new.
It's new for them.
Right.
Yeah,
the old guys, they may have seen it before, but they like the good quality of the other one. Plus, I also make a nice routine around it that has totally different than the original routine.
Right.
So I just update it to a different routine. Before I even get to the ring, I take a half dollar and I turn that half dollar into that round ring right in front of their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a la appetizer, I didn't even do the trick yet. They're going, where in the heck did the half dollar go? It's now a ring.
Yeah.
And I say, well, if you like that, now watch this. And then I get into the actual trick.
Right.
So I just try to take it up a notch because
audience
is now a little more sophisticated than they used to be.
Well, that's very true. It's same thing like with your telephone or your cell phone, whenever you used to show somebody.
Mentor.
That's right.
Mr. Wizard, right?
Exactly. But initially, when things came out that they were impressed by that, then it got to be, where'd you get that app? It's not you doing the trick. It's the app doing the trick. And that goes back to, I think, long ago when magicians would do an illusion on stage and people say the box is doing it and not the magician. He's just pointing. He's a box pointer. So that's why you have to put your personality into something.
Well, you hit a good point. This Magi's Mentor was put out exactly for two reasons. The old Mr. Wizard, where you had somebody at the other end of the phone that you could talk to and give them the hint.
Mm-hmm.
This Magi's Mentor, you never get on the phone to talk to the other person on the other end of the phone.
Right.
Also, with all these trick apps on the phone, why we put out Magyar as Mentor is you're using a spectator's phone that you don't even go near.
Explain the effect for people who obviously haven't heard what you're talking about.
Magyar's Someone Mentor. Thinks of an ESP card. They don't select it. There's no force. They think of one.
One of five.
Right. It's either a star, the plus, the circle, the square, et cetera, the wavy lines. They dial a phone number on their phone that you don't go near, and the other person on their end of the phone that they just dialed tells them the ESP symbol that they thought of.
Right.
And again, I like this, and this is what I think, I don't use the word fool, but fools, the magician and the layman, is there is no special app because it's their phone.
That's right.
You don't handle their phone beforehand. And it's like a joke about a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's like the salesman knocked, the traveling salesman knocked on the farmer's door. And he says, my car broke down. Can you sleep here? He says, well, he said, I can sleep. You can sleep here, but you have to sleep with my son. He says, wait a minute. Am I in the wrong joke? Okay. So that's a joke about a joke.
Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. So this Magi's Mentor is all the tricks that the magician knows about from the past. This blows him out of the water, the principle behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes it so much fun. So if the magician thinks, oh, yes, it's a certain app, no, because it's a spectator's phone that you don't touch.
They and it remains also in their phone, so they can redial that again and get...
Same answer, right, exactly. And the other one, again, is a thought of ESP symbol. It's not a forced piece, which is good.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm having a good time with that one there.
Yeah.
But
was that something that was suggested to you by one of the jobbers? Or
no, that's a good question. We have a good friend who works at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical College. His name is Wade. Loves magic, and he's a genius. He works on the cockpit computers. He's very, very smart, and he came up with that idea. There was another trick he came out with that he can't keep up production, so he stopped doing it because he's so busy with his other job called ESP360. Just a phenomenal piece of magic, and I sold every one he's ever made, but limited production, but it took him a long time to make each one.
Yeah.
And I would sell more than he had time to make them, literally. He said, this is not my full-time job. I said, well, you gave it to me to sell. I'm selling them. It was an expensive piece, but it was phenomenal. And so now he put out something that was easily produced for him, but was strong as well. And, you know, the journey when you do magic, in my opinion, is as important as getting there to the finale.
Right.
Have the jokes, the fun time, the wow, this and that. And that's what the Magi's Mentor is. It's just the things that you're doing before you even get to the finale. And then, bam, that little cherry on top of the sundae is when the person on the other phone tells them what it is. I was like, whew.
Wow. And do you use that as part of your regular performance?
I do.
In your own show?
I love it. Yeah, I do. And again, you know, there's a will, there's a way. When I was doing that Magic Castle lecture, I wanted to do it there, but I wanted to make sure everybody could hear that speaker on the cell phone.
Right.
And that's when they came up with the handheld microphone to put it up there so that it magnified throughout the whole theater.
Right.
Which was good.
So you mix mentalism with magic and comedy all in one show?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That's I like to do it all. And, you know, if you go to a buffet, you like to sample little things.
Hmm.
So that's why I do a little rope, little coins, little cards, little mentalism, a little bit of everything.
Because,
you know, you've been eating at a restaurant before where you're not full, but you think you're full because you're tired of the same taste of the food.
Mm-hmm.
You just had so much. But yet you have room, you want to have a little dessert, even though you're physically full, because you want to get your taste buds. I really believe if you just do all card tricks, if you just do all coin tricks, no matter how good they are, it gets too much.
But at some point, are you going to be believable? In other words, that the issue I've heard about those who will introduce mentalism into a comedy routine, you've been funny, and then all of a sudden you are serious, and will they take you serious, or is like, this really just a trick also? Because you are trying to put yourself in the position of being able to know future events by being a clairvoyant or a psychic or something in what you're doing, even though you might have some jokes and things like that, but it's like, wait a minute, how did he know that? So in other words, what is he? I'm thinking specifically. I saw a guy one time who was an illusionist, and he did this very serious kind of a dramatic routine with a skull zombie, and had a floating piano, and you know, just a lot of stuff, and slow music and whatnot. And then after he took his applause and everything, then he did a Lester-like head chopper guillotine routine with all the standard lines, everything, with some kind of carnival music in the background. It's like I was so into him being so serious, and suddenly it's like, what? You know, so the rest of this must have all been just trickery. So he didn't know what he or who he wanted to be. So your character is not defined. You're just a purveyor of tricks.
You just answered that question. Your character. No, your character is not defined.
Yeah.
It's like theater.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate goal of doing all this is one thing: is to entertain the audience.
Yeah.
And if you can entertain an audience, whether it be comedy and mentalism, whatever, but you're right, it's all the posture of how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
If they know you're doing comedy, but you're still doing some stuff that's going to fool the heck out of the audience.
Yeah.
Again, I like to use the word fool, but you know, you are fooling, entertaining, whatever.
Sure.
Then you got they know you're doing comedy, but yet you're doing the other end. Like, okay, that's funny, but how in the heck did that card vanish? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think they know what you're getting at. Amazing Jonathan just do some things like that. Remember?
Yes.
He's crazy comedy.
Yeah.
But he did things sometimes like, that's funny, but how did he do that?
That's true. I've seen him perform several times, and I remember sometimes it'll be 30 minutes and he hasn't done really one trick that has worked or whatever. You
sure.
know? But it's been entertaining, right?
Michael Finney?
Yeah.
Another one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Funny guy, but yet he restores that rope or the card on the forehead or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the entertainment value where you work in a different part of people's brains.
Right.
They're laughing, amazed. And they don't know whether when to laugh, when to be amazed, or if you did that on purpose or not.
Yeah.
You just totally keep, in my opinion, I like to keep the audience on the edge of their seat.
Mm-hmm.
What's he going to say next?
Right.
What's he going to do next? Versus a guy who goes along. And remember, mentalism, in my opinion, is very hard to make come off more than 5 minutes.
It requires more scripting and less impromptu. Positional.
But more than five minutes of a mentalist, you already know the ending. You know they're going to get it.
Yeah.
So like, okay.
It's anticlimactic.
Big time, right?
Yeah.
You already know that they're going to predict the newspaper or this. So you get a guy like Max Maven who's very entertaining and does that, and he can go on for 40 minutes or half an hour. I think they're far and few between. Banachek's another one that entertains. We had both of them in Daytona, and they killed in Daytona. So I think that's a very difficult art, is to be a mentalist and be extremely entertaining.
You had a thing in your lecture last evening that was along that line from the standpoint that was in a nest of boxes in which you had borrowed something such that the climax was supposedly something with a key being wherever, and then it's like, oh, it's not that. So the anticipation of the audience was, ah, here's where it's going to be, and then it's like, well, it's not. Well, then where is it? Where does this key go? Oh, it's way over there. So it's that's interesting.
Yeah, that's theater, again, where you're giving them more than they're expecting. It, to me, it's so important to almost have like a double ending.
Yeah.
Where not only do you make the girl reappear, but now she's in a different costume.
Right.
When your audience is at the finish line waiting for you, I don't know if it's as entertaining as if you're ahead of them and they're dragging behind you.
That's right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, again, mentalism, they already know you're going to get it, so they're at the finish line. So if you can do something different they're not expecting, that's extremely important. And it's like, it titillates their brain a little bit. And, again, that goes back again to kind of like theater. Just see the last Super Bowl with New England and Seattle?
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, meaning that's why you watch it. I told my wife beforehand that Seattle's going to run in, the game's going to be over. There's no way he's not going to get it in there. And of course, he threw it, and like wow, what a different twist to this movie. I thought that movie was good. For sure, I knew the ending.
Sure, sure.
And that was the same kind of, even though it was definitely not planned, but it was, isn't that neat how that's what people walked away and go, damn, that was good.
That's true. Let me go off in a different direction over here, too. We're going back to being a dealer, and I want to talk about ethics for just a minute in magic, and because I used to work with Walter Blaney years ago, and we had the World Alliance of Magicians, and trying to shut down some people who were building illusions illegally or that was intellectual property and everything. And I know that some dealers, I remember a dealer once going through their bin of stuff and they had some lecture notes and they were just photocopies of somebody else's, and I don't think that they had the rights to copy, you know, some things like that. And I remember after the Harbin book had been put out that for a while that was photocopied and people, because it's unavailable and costs thousands of dollars if you could ever find it, and so somebody had actually put that onto had Xeroxed it and was selling that. And I know that people have said some things about Daytona Magic, well, you know, that this isn't something that they had the rights to. Do you have any? I feel like it's kind of like an elephant in the room I've got to address. You know?
No.
Any question or comment?
You know, it's funny. I've been in this business a long, long time. And what a crazy line it is, where you do and where you don't do. First of all, I don't know any magic dealer that doesn't make things that aren't questionable.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the line drawn where you don't make or you do make? The people, there's so many answers to this question. You don't make things that are obviously somebody else's and just blatantly just bring it out there.
Right.
If it's an item, in my opinion, that's not on the market anymore and people want to buy it, what's it going to hurt to put it out then? I mean, it's nothing that you're not stepping anybody's toes.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's, and our philosophy is simple. If we can buy something, there's a million things that we can't buy that we'd rather put on the market and just buy the items that we can buy.
Mm-hmm.
boy, you look in China now, there's not a distributor in this world
that's true.
That isn't putting things out in China that's being ripped off.
The Magic Collectors, when I was talking then with Richard Block and Nick Ruggiero about this, that they have said that there were some things they wanted to put out, they wanted to make, and in high craftsmanship. And so they had approached whoever, that they would do as much research as they could to find the inventor and say, okay, we're going to pay you. And then later someone will say, well, actually, that was my idea.
He said,
look, we only pay once. You know, and that this was, you need to work it out with that person, because that we understood that they were representing that this was their original idea.
That's a very, very good point.
Yeah. So do you go back? I mean, do you talk to some people
absolutely.
In those cases?
We have absolutely before in the past to try to do that. Like I said, we bought Jim G's stuff out. We paid him. We bought another guy out and paid him for his ideas. It's such a gray line where people say they invented things and you go back and they really haven't.
Yeah.
One was a topsy-turvy bottles, where somebody said they invented, because we carried two brands. We didn't even make them. We just carried two brands because they were offered to us.
Yeah.
And the one guy said to us, well, if you carry this brand, then I'm not going to deal with him because we invented the trick. And we did research on it, and we found old magazines and stuff that he did invent that
way
trick.
Way before him.
There's a lot of people that make claim to things.
Sure.
That's totally not true. Mm-hmm. And then what about when people just change it a little bit? Mm-hmm. The idea, you know, and now it's no longer done with this, it's done this way,
right.
with a glass tube versus a wooden tube or something, you know?
If it's at all possible to go back to the inventor, you know, there was a trick that you had shown in your lecture last evening that, to me, looked like it was based upon an Alan Wakeling idea with the multiple cards on one, so that way when you're fanning the cards that he had in the book called The Magic of Alan Wakeling by Jim Steinmeier. And I had come up with an idea, which I know you had sold, I think, for me for a while also, called Straight and Wild, which has similar kind of a thing. But I had contacted Alan Wakeling to say, hey, look, this was inspired by your book. And he said, and I got a letter that said, yeah, this is significantly different enough from what my idea was that you're free to market. And similarly, that yours is completely different also from his and from mine. It seemed to be inspired by that, from that standpoint of being straight with the cards, you know, all on one, you know, kind of a thing. It's and the handling with that in your pocket and et cetera, that it's significant enough of a difference. And I think that's fine if you just take an idea and carry it forward. But painting a blue box red and saying it's new is not different.
You're 100% right, especially if it's a guy's his idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, square circles, you know what I mean? There's things like that have been, you know what I mean,
sure.
Around different square.
There's some things in public domain, I guess you'd say.
Exactly. You remember we talked about stress?
Yeah.
My life has so many things going on. I try not to get too tied down. I try literally from my heart not to hurt anybody or step on anybody's toes by all means.
Yeah.
We try to research where things are and things aren't. I mean, just like scotch and sodas. Mm-hmm. We bought Connie Hayden. He was an old coin guy. We bought all his tools out, his lathes out back when, because he happened to live in our town when he was at the end of his career.
Yeah.
So he gave us ideas and things. I know he didn't invent the scotch and soda either and so on. So, boy, there's a wide open line there of what is, what isn't.
Right.
Things are being, like I said, sent to China nowadays that are just being copied. Our stuff that we invented put out, Spelling Bee is one of ours that we made. Mm-hmm. It's been ripped off more than once. We could stress out and start going to the people. But you know what? There's so many other items out there. We just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
We don't freak out over it. This market nowadays with the internet is prostituted, for lack of a better word. It's just really out there and it's just happening. Just hit customer service. You really try not to step on anybody's toes. We don't want to try to do that.
Right.
We literally try to be...
What is your mission statement? Would you have a mission statement really for Daytona Magic? I mean, what is it you're trying to accomplish? What do you want to offer to the community?
You know, customer service, treat people how you want to be treated, and respect your customer. Having said that, when you're a nice guy, some people try to take advantage of you, and being a nice guy doesn't mean you're stupid. So we literally want to meet everybody halfway and treat them, like I said, with a ton of respect. We want people to know if they need something, they can call me anytime. My cell phone number is on my business card because I'm not afraid to talk to anybody. I want to help them. I love, and I always say this to many people. I say, when you're using this trick you got from me and you're knocking their socks off, I say, in the back of your mind, just think of me. Say, thank you, Harry. That's all I want you to have, because I know the stuff that I sell to somebody is strong and is good.
Right.
Somebody could come to me with $1,000 and they want a trick, and if it's not for them, I'll tell them straight up. I'll say, you know what? You probably don't want to get that one. You'll never be able to do that, or you won't like that, or you can't do it from this direction. And I'll say, let's get something else.
Because that could be the last trick they buy, and because they can't do it
absolutely
properly, and so they'll get discouraged and quit.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you right now, I'm in this business to make a living, but I literally, as much as I sell, I can't just sell somebody something to sell to them unless mm-hmm. I really mean what I'm selling. Mm-hmm. It has to come from my soul and my heart.
Sure.
And that's, I really mean that truthfully. If a kid came to me and wanted to do something that's sleight of hand, I would tell them, we're known for that in our shop, all our guys as well. You sell things to people that they can do and make sure they can do it. Not just sell them something just because you want to sell them something. We don't do that because we know magic is extremely addictive.
Yeah.
When you go out there with a trick, whether you wow an audience in your family, whether you're doing a church show or whatever you're doing, guess what, man? I got to get more. This was like unreal. Seriously,
sure.
We get it.
Yeah.
But if you sell something that somebody's going to fall flat on their face from the beginning, they say, well, magic's not for me.
Right.
And that's not good for anybody.
That's right. Well, as we wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to ask my guests what their magic word would be. What is it that you live by? I mean, you've said a lot of really good things over here. It could be a word, a phrase. What's important to you?
Yeah. Basically, respect.
That's good.
Yeah.
I heard that word throughout as we were mm-hmm. talking, so we kept
and that's
touching
not just the
that,
magic
so.
That's
sure.
just treating people
in life.
Checking at a hotel room, anything, you're right at the desk mm-hmm. there, just respect people, and because I think people appreciate respect.
Right. Great. Well, Harry, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and being on The Magic Word here with us this week. It's been great.
Second time, I think, isn't
it? I believe it is, yeah. When we were down at the Daytona Magic convention when I was there, we spoke briefly. We didn't actually go into this much detail, so I'm glad to have time to sit down and let people get to know Harry Allen so much better here.
Thanks, Scott.
So, for The Magic Word podcast, that was Harry Allen. This is Scotty Allen. Thanks, Harry, for your time, your candid comments, and also for an entertaining lecture you gave us here in Houston. I know that Harry is a friend to many in our community, and I'm sure he would appreciate hearing from you, particularly during this time when his wife is in such poor health. You can reach him directly at harry@daytonamagic.com. Just drop him an email. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. If you enjoyed this podcast or any of the previous 200-plus podcasts, then please help spread the word. The magic word, that is, by telling your friends and liking us on Facebook at facebook.com/themagicwordpodcast and on Twitter at twitter.com/magicwordpod. And if you want to see some of my magic and Martini Thursday photos, then follow me on Instagram at instagram.com/scottwellsmagic. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and measure twice, cut once. This is Scotty out.